the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site that covers Arizona Cardinals. In our second show of the week, I have my co-host, Seth Cox, from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. It is episode 652, and it's supposed to be draft preview, but we've got some extra news to do. We've got the news. Trey McBride got his extension. Here we are, April 3rd. He's coming off his third season. The Cardinals have literally never given an extension this early. I detailed this about 2.5 weeks ago, that the history for players getting their extensions when they're already under contract is July and August. Seth, how surprised were you when the news came down? I was teaching one of my classes, and I got tagged in Slack from our graphics guy to let me know. I was like, hey, here's a graphic. I'm like, for what? I'm like, oh, McBride? Well, I guess I got to get this written. So there you go. McBride gets his deal done April 3rd, not July, not August, but I guess now we have to talk about other stuff in the offseason rather than speculate when the deal is going to get done.
Yeah, and it makes sense. You and I were talking about it a little bit off the air, right? Like, there's a couple guys coming up that are going to affect what he gets or what he could have received, and the biggest one being George Kittle, right? George Kittle, the highest paid tight end in NFL history, when he signed his original deal in 2020. It's up this year. I mean, you know, so they're trying to redo the deal because basically he's taken up $22 million in cap space for the 49ers. So you're thinking to yourself, all right, let's get this done. And so it makes sense if you think about it in this way. Get the deal done before Kittle signs for three, because he's 32, right? So he's not going to sign a 4 or 5 year deal, but if he signs a 2 or 3 year deal at $20+ million a year average annual value, then the Cardinals have to match that, right?
Or at least pass it, because yeah, he's younger, he's more productive now. It's insane. And here are the numbers. It's a 4-year extension with $76 million of new money. So it kicks in next year. He'll be under contract till 2029. The per year average of the extension is $19 million per year. And so it's just a shade under what Josh Sweat got. It's got $43 million guaranteed and $32.5 million guaranteed at signing. And we'll get the details, how much, like, he was due to make $5.3 million this year. So we will see what changes. And so if it's just $76 million of new money and he keeps the same amount of money as he was due to make this year, then it would basically, the Cardinals have him under contract for 5 years for the total of about 81.3. But I'm guessing this year's salary might drop close to the league minimum after the signing bonus that they get. So it'll be interesting to see how the things are structured. But
the one thing we have seen with Monty's deals is it's not time. They don't backload things like they were. It's almost the opposite at this point, where they're like, hey, we'll figure out a way to get this off the books early. And now, don't get me wrong, they put some void years on the back end, stuff like that. But we're not seeing the, you know, $17 million, the $15 million numbers on the back end of deals. anymore because that's and maybe that's a Bidwell thing. Maybe Bidwell's like, hey, I'm tired of hearing about all this dead money that we're carrying over year to year. Because remember, what was it, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, the Cardinals were tops in that.
that was thanks to getting rid of DeAndre Hopkins. And yeah.
But not just DeAndre Hopkins,
Jordan Phillips, J.J. Watt, because they had those void years, and Rodney Hudson was he. Oh, that was all fun. But that basically it allowed them to clear the space down the line, which they're doing okay right now in terms of dead money. But we'll have to wait and see how that goes. But like, I think the most impressive thing is that in terms of timing, because if, like you said, if Kittle gets his deal done first, and he's going to get paid over $20 million per year on the new money, you'd have to get Trey that at least. And so they get it in under. It's a slight increase. He is right now has the richest tight end contract ever at $19 million per year. The highest per average money given to a tight end was Travis Kelce's previously at $17.1 million per year. And so this wasn't exactly a reset. It was just like the normal inflation rather than, you know, if Kittle does his deal, maybe they reset it at $24 million or $23 million a year. And so, you know, definitely Trey will get your money, but in terms of managing things, and we talked about this when Kyler got his extension, when his agent came out and basically drew the line into the sand, hey, we want this deal now. I think his agent offered him, was it $41 or $42 million a year?
Yeah. It
cost him $5 more million per year because of waiting till July, because other contracts came into play. And so, you know,
but we also know that to your point, they're not resetting the market, right? They're just taking the natural progression of things. But the reality is Bidwell is he is a good soldier, right, for the NFL. So he was never going to be the guy that changes how and when guys are getting paid, right? Like, that's just not he wants the NFL, or he wants other guys to do that, but he's going to be the guy that goes with the flow and continues to do things in the way the NFL has always done them, type of thing. You know, but I do want to shout out Joe Marino. I've known Joe forever. Bills guy, but does a lot of NFL draft stuff. You know, we used to way back in the day work together-ish when we were at Draft Breakdown. But he made the best point, I think, and this is, you know, I'd love to get your opinion on this. You know, he is now the highest paid tight end in NFL history, right? But 111 catches, over 1,100 yards receiving. I know, only two touchdowns. Oh, but utilization is wide receiver one-esque, right?
Yes.
That he is the if you put him just APY, so average per year, in wide receivers, 23rd. 23rd, Jess. Like, that is how, because think about this. If Marv puts up similar numbers in years two and three,
mm-hmm.
we're going to be talking, what, $30 million a year?
Yeah, he'll hit that $30 plus million a year. That's how much it'll cost him.
So this is, to your point, man, this is just, it's one of those things. Kudos to Monty. Kudos to Bidwell. Like, you know, we do, you know, push back a lot, but when he does well like this, we have to give him his props. And that's kind of what this was, is, hey, you know, we're going to reset this market or adjust this market. Let's get it done now so we don't have to, and overpay would be a strong word, but we're not paying $2 or $3 million more a year. So, you know, another $8 to $12 million on a 4-year deal, right?
Yeah. And that I would like to point out of all the many faults that this organization has, aside for how the Kyler contract went down, the Cardinals have never had a problem with giving their good young talent high paying deals on their second deal after the rookie deal. They've never had a problem with that. They've never had a problem with that for the guys that established themselves. They willingly do that. Kyler was the only one that had the sort of contention to it and the holdout and things like that. And so it's good to see. I wonder if this will become more of a trend then, if we'll start seeing extensions come earlier then.
Right. And to your point, the other thing is, let's hope that they have those more than one at a time. That's kind of what it's always been, hasn't it, Jess? It's always been like, all right, they got to pay Fitz, you know, and obviously they had Bolden, but they were like, well, we can't pay both. And so that was kind of the one time where they had multiple guys that came up at once, and they just, I don't want to say bungled it, but they didn't do a great job with it. And then since then, it's been, you know, we got to pay Patrick. And then it's like, okay, now we got to pay Fitz again. Now we got to pay, you know, Chandler. Now we got to, you know, but there was never like, hey, we got to pay Fitz, Chandler, Patrick all at the same time.
Yeah.
Because they weren't stacking talent. Let's hope that's the next iteration of this, is like, hey, we paid Trey. Now we got to pay, I know people are going to hate to hear this. Hey, we got to pay Kyler again. Hey, you know, now we need to extend
Harris.
PJJ. Now we got to extend Harrison. You know, that's what we're hopeful for here. Garrett Williams, you know, all these guys that have looked good at times or been good at times. Now it's the next thing is like, okay, let's all get them good at the same time. So that's the core that you build around.
Yep. Coming up next on the Res of Sear podcast, Best Serve Cardinals Talk on the Web. We're going to dive into what this show is supposed to be the focus, where we look at our draft preview continuing on. Today is the offensive line. We'll talk day one prospects to know. That's coming up next on Res of Sear Red. We're back on the Rise of Seared podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. And now it is time to delve into what this show was meant to be. This is our third draft preview show. Last week, we jumped in with the pass rushers, the edge defenders. Earlier this week, we talked about the defensive tackles, episode 651, when we also talked about the addition of Calais Campbell. This one, we're going to focus on the offensive line. Now, we're going to bunch up tackles and interior guys all at once, but let us start with day one. Now, and I said this on the last show, it feels like to me that if I had to bet money on a position that's going to get drafted, I'm leaning towards the offensive line. And so this group in particular is interesting. Would we say there's probably, is it what, four-ish tackles and probably two guards that will be first rounders, don't you think?
Yeah, and that's the hard part, Jess, is there's a couple question marks. And we'll talk about all of them, but I mean there's question marks on one guy because of coming off an injury, and now it's a different injury than it was initially, which is always odd, right? Like, we always think that we know what the injuries are, and then they come off differently. And then
let's dive into the two guys that we don't anticipate that are basically viewed that they're not going to be around because they're going to be top 10-ish. For a while, Will Campbell, LSU, was like a top five lock. Maybe he's still there, but you know, the arm length concerns. You got Will Campbell, LSU, and you've got Armon Membu, who with his combine basically flew up boards and might end up being the guy that gets drafted first. Do you think that might actually happen?
Yeah, and Membu's the one to watch for me because, like you said, there's kind of there's really no consensus on where he goes outside of that he goes in the top 10, right? You mentioned Will Campbell. I think he's still going to be first one off the board. I think he makes sense to the New England Patriots because of just their kind of what they expect and what they want, and he's that good. I mean, he's a special player. Like you said, arms measured in under 33 inches, and then he got remeasured at his pro day and came in over or just at 33 inches. And apparently that was a thing. This combine.
It's been a thing on some of big, like, you know, I know Justin likes to talk about your buddy Justin Higgins likes to talk about big draft, Kuiper and Field Yates. Well, Kuiper in particular talks about if with his arms not reaching that 33, because you draft traits, and Field Yates is like, you know, I've seen enough of him. He's going to be great. And so yeah, he goes either like worst case scenario. So he's either a great tackle or he's a great guard. Like, right. you look at him, he's played left tackle. He protected for Jaden Daniels, Nussmeier, their quarterback there at LSU. Now there's enough tape on there in the SEC. And so he's not going to even be like Membo and Campbell aren't going to be even under consideration. So let's not spend a ton of time on those guys other than they're expected to be really good. And that brings us to the next two tackles that I think are going to come into play. One is Kelvin Banks out of Texas and Josh Simmons out of Ohio State. Where Simmons falls is going to be super interesting because, as you know, at Ohio State in 2023, he looked good but was really bad with penalties. And then last season, he started the season and was just incredible. Now, granted, it was not Ohio State's gauntlet of games in the Big Ten, and so he got injured that knee early on. But I believe the stats were no penalties, no pressures, nothing. And if he'd stayed healthy and had continued that, wouldn't he probably be OT1 off the board?
Yeah, you would think without the injury, and the injury is more questionable at this point than anything else, because it was said to be an ACL. And so everybody's just like, oh, ACL, whatever. But then it came out that it was a patella. And so now it's like, okay, now we got to reeval, right? Because patella is a little bit different than an ACL in terms
of O-line instead of running back. Probably the most famous Cardinals incident with a torn patellar tendon would be Ryan Williams way, way, way back in the early 2010s. That great young running back who flashed and then never did anything again because he got injured in the first preseason. He never recovered from that knee injury. So luckily it's a tackle position, so he doesn't have to move the same way a running back does. But Kelvin Banks, what's the good and the bad on him? Like, what he protected, he played left tackle at Texas, protecting Quinn Ewers for several seasons and including playing in the SEC last year on a Texas team that was fantastic. Is there really much to worry about with Kelvin Banks?
I think the biggest question mark with Banks comes in the form of like, well, if one, I think he's pretty young. I think he's like just turned 21. So he's very young. He actually reminds me quite a bit of DJ Humphreys coming out. Young, kind of, you know, kind of baby fattish still, not in like a negative way, but like has the room and the size to be, you know, to grow and get bigger. I mean, arm length was fine. Nothing to write home about, right? Like cleared the 33. His wingspan's better, which means he's a broad fellow, right? So obviously arm length is, you know, from the shoulder joint down to the longest finger. Wingspan is across the back. And so, you know, when he's 26th percentile for arm length, but he's 82nd percentile for wingspan.
Got a wide body. And he moves well enough. Like, there's nothing off the charts with his athleticism, but it moves well enough. 5'1", 640, 7.813 cone, 4.66 short shuttle. So not elite numbers, but there's nothing of real, there's no concern. There's no red flags.
Exactly.
That's important.
Yeah, 100%. And so the Humphreys thing is the first thing to me, that I look at. You know, he's, you know, what were the big deals with Hump coming out? One, obviously maturity, right? Young guys getting drafted early is always a issue. And you and I have talked about this, and I know people hate this, and I understand this, but like in the room, Banks wouldn't exactly be expected to start right away. Now, if he won jobs, completely different, right? But yes, they're not looking at him going, all right, you gotta be the right guard, you gotta be the right tackle. They have investments in those positions. So if he's the best player, then he plays. If not, that's a year to grow, get bigger, stronger, you know, and be ready for the position, especially if he has to transition to right tackle. Because, you know, theoretically, you would not move PJJ from left tackle back to right tackle, but you would be open to moving Banks from left tackle, where he only played in college, to right tackle. Part of the reason, if the medicals come back clear, I prefer Simmons. Simmons played right tackle at San Diego State before transitioning over to left tackle. And as you said, struggling a little bit his first year at left tackle before becoming probably Paris Johnson level talented this year before the injury. Like the dude was completely dominant. That's not to take anything away from Banks. Still extremely talented, still extremely capable. Just one of those like nitpicking things that we can talk about. That's one of the
things. And the thing about Simmons that makes him more intriguing as well is the connection to Cardinals offensive line coach Justin Fry. So like they're like this thing sort of thing comes out all the time, but there was some scout chatter about him being just garbage, like a character bad, work ethic bad. But Justin Fry would know 100% the work ethic and character of Josh Simmons, having coached him for two seasons at Ohio State. And so I would assuming the medicals come back, I would guess that Simmons would be the pick over Banks. And I've been on the record. I think I said it here on the show. I think I've written on the site is, you know, if Jonah Williams is healthy this year, I think you're just plugging whoever that is in at right guard this year. We've seen a lot of tackles, a lot of great tackles begin their career playing inside simply because you just want to get the top guys in there. And that's kind of why I feel if we're going to look at like those first two picks in the first and the second round, if there's two positions where you can have a guy who could have at least a moderate impact this year, the two positions that you can look at are on the offensive line, where you have the potential playing right tackle, right guard, and starting as a rookie, and receiver. Pretty much everywhere else, they're going to have to find and carve out a role. And if this is like how the Cardinals have done with their top picks before, they drafted Paris Johnson and they just put him in a left tackle immediately. They drafted Marvin Harrison, made him the X immediately. And so it'd be interesting to see what they do there. But there are also, is there for you one or two more likely tackles? Josh Connerly, Oregon. He's a guy that's possibly going to the first round. Is there anyone else to know for day one?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we can mention, and I think he's going to go on day two, but we can mention Ariante Ursary, the mammoth tackle out of Minnesota. He came out of the combine and really impressed, because it's very rare, Jess, to see a guy that's 6'6". And I want to make sure I get his weight right. 331. So 6'6 and a quarter. So over 6'6, 331 pounds. And then he moves insanely well for that size. I mean, 501 40, 111 inch broad, like explosive for that size. So it'll be interesting to see, because, you know, guys like, again, just athletic comparisons, not comparing players, but guys like Jason Peters, Darnell Wright, Roger Saffold, who've been drafted in the top 60 picks, Andrew Whitworth, and had really good careers, match that athletic size and profile. He'll be an interesting one to watch, but, you know, I think he's more of a day two guy personally. But like you said, with the kind of dearth of round one just lineman talent, you could see somebody that big that moves that well potentially getting the call.
There are two interior guys worth noting, even though I think Seth and I would maybe agree that they probably wouldn't be targeted by the Cardinals, but you've got Alabama guard Tyler Booker, who was for the longest time just penciled in as he's going to be the first guard taken off the board. And then you've got Gray Zabel, the rising kid out of North Dakota State, who played multiple spots, but was a left tackle this last year because he was the best lineman, projects as a guard, maybe a center. And he's been mocked the card. In fact, both Booker and Zabel have been mocked by notable mock draft people, not notable analysts at one time or another this offseason going to the Cardinals. Seth, you and Justin were talking in our group chat about Tyler Booker, and the thing that the tape is good, the character is excellent. The coaches love, like, he's a Will Anderson type worker leader, you know, character guy, but he moved really, really poorly at the combine, which leads you to have basically what is your major concern with Booker?
Yeah, I actually wrote about him today, just as, you know, kind of going through the consensus big board, looking at the guys that could be available in the range that the Cardinals pick. Booker comes out and realistically, you know, again, it's not the talent that you're concerned about, but guys that move like Booker, it's very rare to see them succeed. Came in just a shade under 6'5", over 320 pounds, so he's not overtly heavy. He has really, really long arms, 34.5-inch arms, massive hands, 11-inch hands. But he had a decent vertical, really bad broad jump, just the 14th percentile, 94 inches. And then his three cone literally just barely beat the 8-second cutoff that we have to be undraftable. And then his 20-yard shuttle barely beat the 4.9 that you want to see these guys in front of. There's a lot of names in this list, man, that tested similarly. And there's only one, and I guess we can throw in a second, but there's only one that has been what I would say is a, you know, a success in the NFL. And he was drafted early, and that's Mikey Potty. Potty, you know, came out of Idaho, a little bit bigger at 331, but same type of arm length, you know, same type of testing numbers. And he was actually a little worse in the short shuttle, coming at 4.93 versus a 4.84 for Booker. So that's, you know, the one thing. But like the other names are not great. And the only other one that's been successful was Aaron Banks. And I think Banks went in the third round. I don't remember if it was the second or the third round.
Yeah, I think it was third.
But, you know, so that's the thing. So I personally, and this is just me, I don't matter for anything. I went, he went in the late second. So,
oh, was it? Okay.
I would not take Tyler Booker in the first round. I just wouldn't. Okay. If he was there.
What about Zabel?
I think Zabel, because of the versatility, because of the athleticism, I mean, we're talking about a guy that's literally started at five positions along the offensive line, which is, you know, absurd. Size-wise, he's a little lean at 312, you know, more of a tackle measurable than a guard at that weight, but just insane. Athleticism testing numbers. I mean, we've seen guys like that come out and they're hard to find. His broad jump and his vertical jump are literally over 90th percentile. Actually, his vertical jump, if you put it in the guard metrics, is 99th percentile all time. Like, that's how good his vertical was. You know, and you look at names that have come out, man, there's a lot of good ones. Obviously, the highest end that, you know, we don't talk about, but built very similarly, tested very similarly, is like a Steve Hutchinson. Now, again, you ain't getting Steve Hutchinson. Like, if he turns into Steve Hutchinson, you just tip your cap, but like, you're not projecting him to be Steve
Hutchinson. Oh, that, right? That's unfair. It's unfair. And it, again, we would like to note, even though like we don't know exactly, so middle of the first round to the end of the first round, you know, maybe even the top of the second round, that's just how the draft kind of goes. It would be a break from, it would be straying from the trends that the Cardinals have had the last two seasons with the draft, the 2 years where they haven't taken an FCS guy at all. This, like, the smallest school the Cardinals have gone in the 2 years was UAB, and that was last year with Tajon Palmer, and he was a sixth-round pick, round pick. So that'll be interesting to see with that. And so that kind of wraps up our day one guys to know. So coming up next on the Rise of Secret podcast, let's start Cardinals talking a little. Let's look at guys to consider on day two. That's coming up next on Rise of Secret. We're back on the Rise of Seared podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk of the web. Now looking at rounds 2 and 3. And this, so this is where we will start to talk about a few more interior guys. But in terms of the tackles, Ursary, you already talked about as a maybe late round one sneaking in there. Guys to know, tackles to know in day two. Would that include guys like Marcus Embo? Does Emory Jones make it into day two? LSU guy.
You know, you mentioned obviously Connerly and Ursary. Jones is a guy that I think he's gonna go on day two, but probably third round. Okay. You know, which again is still, that's still great. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Another one, Anthony Belton out of North Carolina State's a guy that could go in the third round. You know, he came out, and where did my notes go? Oh, he came out, you know, at 6'6", 336 pounds. Again, a lot of these guys, you wonder if they're positional versatile or if they're right tackles only with their size, because it's just odd how many massive guys we've seen come out this year. The other question is, like, based on this guy's size or some of these guys' size, are they guys that you have to move inside a guard, like we've seen with Mekhi Becton, right? And so those are all questions that teams will have to answer. This is what I'll say about Belton. 6'6", 336, tested in the 67th and 70th percentile in his jumps, but his speed agility metrics were just at the average, 50% metric. So he's a very average mover, but he's explosive. So that's why I wonder if he can play that guard position, you know, if you move him inside the guard, because he is so explosive in more of a you know, power-based scheme. But we'll see how that works out, you know, because if you put his metrics as a guard, he actually is an above-average mover and things like that. But we've seen guys, you know, Donovan Smith, who was the guy out of, where did I lose it to? Landon Dickerson, excuse me. And even like a Dominic Pooney last year that have all been drafted and you know, that had similar movement skills to Belton. You mentioned Jones. I like Emory Jones. I thought, you know, it's always tough to be the other guy.
Emory Jones is polarizing, is kind of how the vibe that I've gotten from what I've read, what I've heard on podcasts and things like that, is that you either believe in Emory Jones or you're like, not so much.
Well, you got to remember too, man, it's always really difficult to be the other guy, right? Like,
yeah,
you're talking about the consensus number one player coming into this year along the offensive line. Now, like we said, Josh Simmons probably surpassed him during the process if he doesn't get hurt. However, coming into the season, it was literally Will Campbell with a bullet. Like, there was not really any question about who the number one guy was. Jones came in. I think we were all a little surprised about how lean he was. He came in at only 315, but good arm length, big hands again. Another guy with massive hands in this draft. So the question becomes, you know, is he versatile or is he a right tackle only? Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, which, you know, the Cardinals could use. Like, there are lots of teams who could definitely use a right tackle only. That's not a downside. It just makes them less versatile off the bench if they end up being a swing tackle for a year.
Right. And the thing is with Jones is this is obviously super high end, so I don't want people to take this the wrong way. But, like, if he comes out, you know, and plays well, or not even plays well, if he, you know, he's a guy that's built similarly to former first round pick Ryan Ramczyk, who had a great career for the Saints, right? Ramczyk came out of Wisconsin, so another blue blood program, a program that really, you know, and again, Ramczyk wasn't overly heavy at 310 coming out, so Jones checks similar profiles. Doesn't mean he'll ever live up to that level, because again, that's high level. One more guy, or actually a couple more guys we should mention. You mentioned Josh Connerly. He might be, you know, it'll be him or Ursary as the next tackle, depending on, again, we have to always give the caveat about Simmons' knee. You know, if people don't like what they get back in the knee or the medicals, it's a different conversation. But Connerly, you know, 6'5", 311, was at Oregon, took almost all of his snaps at left tackle. He played some at left guard and right guard this year, but like very, very, very few. And he moves well. And so the question becomes, is he a guy that you see having the versatility to play left tackle, or is he a guy that he's genuinely probably the smallest of these guys. He came in at under 6'5" and 311 pounds. So his 33 and a half inch arms don't matter, but he was also one of the most athletic guys, which, you know, if you're going to be small, you should have to be uber athletic. And so that's him. He's a guy that I think might have to kick into guard, and that's not a shot at him. I just worry about the ability to hold up on the edge consistently. But he profiles similarly to guys that have been drafted in the first round, like Broderick Jones and Tyler Guyton. So it's not out of the question. And you know, he's a guy that's been, very good while he was at Oregon, and had a good career. You know, he's not a guy that had to bounce around to find out how good he was. The other Texas tackle, Cameron Williams, he's an interesting one, because again, when you're the other guy, right, like you tend to get overlooked a little bit. 6'6", came in at 317. I think we were a little surprised about the leanness of Williams. He looks a little bit bigger than he was, but he's got vines for arms. I mean, he's long-armed. And then again, I know I've mentioned this a bunch, but like hand size in this class, dude's got 11 and 3/8 inch hands, like massive, massive hands. The question on Williams is going to be movement skills. And then you're taking a risk. This dude was a 1 year starter. He had a excellent, excellent season. But he has problems because, and this is again, where you have to really, I don't want to say get lucky, but you have to really trust your scouts. You're talking about a guy that had 1 year, had some penalty issues because the strength wasn't what we expected and the movement skills didn't necessarily match, but he's got extremely long arms and he probably can be a guy that, that you can move inside or leave at right tackle with the size and length. But again, one full year. I mean, this dude played 125 snaps in 23 just. So like he literally just was a one year.
Mel Kiper said, wondered why he even came out. He would have been the perfect candidate, especially with NIL money now.
I think this is what I always think about guys like him. When they have a good enough year to go on day two, you just do it because with the changes that are happening at Texas in general, you're probably like, I don't want to take a risk, right? Like, I don't want to.
That makes sense.
I don't want to be there. And then a couple more guys, real quick. Well, Ozzie, go ahead.
I would say we have to talk about the guards, though, because there are three, well, definitely two that are like lights out guards that you're going to see go on day two. I would love to see the Cardinals get either one of them. One would be Donovan Jackson out of Ohio State, who ended up being their left tackle down their stretch run for their title. Great guard and proved he can play tackle. Then you've got Tate Rutledge, Georgia, in the combine, running that 4.97 40 at 6.6 308 with that mullet
blowing in the wind, Jess.
But those two, I think, are fantastic guard prods. So if they go a different direction in round one, so they go a pass rusher, I think Tate Rutledge, Donovan Jackson at number 47 would be absolutely home run picks personally. And I know that Marcus Embo didn't he play tackle to Purdue, but there's a lot of question marks of where he's going to play. Is that what that is for him?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, he's a guy that has those question marks. And so you have to decide where you value him. Another guy that's getting looks at tackle, but could kick into guard that's going to go on day two, Jess. And I know we try not to talk about these guys too much, but the Jonah, I can't even pronounce his last name, down at U of A, right? Embo, you know, real quick, came in.
Jonah Savainea.
Yeah. But Embo, real quick, tiny man, like tiny, tiny. 6'4", 300 pounds. 303, but I mean, that's definitely water weight when you come in that small, right? You
yes.
You drink as much. I mean, he might be sub 200 pounds or 300 pounds in real life. And so, you know, the question is, what can he do? Can he play inside? Even if they had to kick him into center with the size. Another one that, you know, you're really projecting, because like you said, he played a ton at right guard, but back in 2022, and then has only played right tackle since, including some, you know, an injury plagued 2023 season. So like he's a tough one. And then Jonah out of U of A, he's big, 6'4", 324. You know, he played, but same thing. This is a dude that played 790 snaps in 22 at right guard, 195 at right guard in 23 with 693 at right tackle. And then he basically played a 50-50 split at left and right tackle last year, obviously after Jordan Morgan went to the NFL. The problem becomes there's a strength question with Jonah and obviously Embo as well. Like those are guys that have to prove that they can hold up at the point of attack consistently. But the way Savainea moves, man, you know, he is an elite athlete at the guard position. Moves similar to like a Quinn Minor as when he was coming out of Wisconsin, D3 Wisconsin Whitewater. So like that is, you know, again, that is what you're looking for on that question, you know, for those questions. But I want to go back to Rutledge and Donovan Jackson. Here's my question for you, Jess, and I genuinely don't have an answer. Donovan Jackson's only played on the left side in his career. Ratledge has basically, he took four snaps in his career at left guard. So he's basically only played right guard his career. Is it important enough? Does it matter enough in those instances to you, like where you have potentially a bigger need at the right guard right now?
Yeah.
Like with that way, or do you just trust, Justin Fry enough to be like, hey, you know, Donovan Jackson, like the back of your hand, you go ahead, you know, you make that call. Like I said, I don't have an answer, but Ratledge is an elite mover. Joe Tooney, Ali Marpet level mover, Kyle Long, who's an all pro as well. I mean, that's what you're talking about in terms of movement skills. I've seen some comps to like Dalton Risner or Quinn Minerez. So like you're talking about a guy that's going to come in, get the job done. As far as Donovan Jackson goes, I think he's a plug and play, like, you know, 10-year type of guy. Like he's that good. The question you have with both guys is, you know, what do you need more and who do you trust more? But yeah, I mean, this is a great draft to have these needs, Jess, because they're all, there's a lot of options, right?
Yes, yes. And I think without the Justin Fry factor, Tate Ratledge, I think, is the one is the easier one to bet on. Donovan Jackson, because you've got the guy on the inside, I wouldn't blame the Cardinals for taking Jackson over Ratledge, but I'd probably take Ratledge. I mean, especially since you have a right guard job that you really don't think. Is it Isaiah Adams? Is it one of these new guys that we're talking about? Like, it'd be perfect to add there. Not that I don't think Donovan Jackson could do it, but that athleticism is something else. Anybody else of note on day two, or should we jump into our day three guys?
Yeah, real quick, the tackles. There's a kid out of Boston College, Ozzie Trapio. Massive, massive kid. I think he came in at 6'8", Jess.
6'8"?
Yeah. So, massive guy there. So he's a good one to know on day two, third round. We're talking here, like he's not going to go early. But really, really big guy. The question with him is just going to be strength, right? Like, that'll, you know, guys that long, you want to see how strong they are. And then Wyatt Millam, he's another one that I don't know where he profiles out of West Virginia. I just know he's a good football player. But I've seen him mocked as a guard. I've seen him mocked as a tackle. Came in at 6'6", 300 pounds. But comps really well to a guy the Cardinals put a big run on, Will Freeze, right? So those are interesting ones. But, you know, Wyatt Millam's only played left tackle in his career. So again, it might be a 1 year transition where he's not a guy that can play right away as he's adjusting if you do want to kick him in the guard.
Thanks on the Rise of Sierra podcast of SR Cardinals talk a little bit. Let's go to day three. Who are the names to know late in the draft? That's coming up next on Rise of Sierra. We're back on the Rise of Sierra podcast, of SR Cardinals talk on the web. Day three players to know. Not that we're going to be able to peg some of these picks, but at least just the name that stands out to me from what I have heard from other shows and things, like Charles Grant, William and Mary, small school. Is he a guy that's going to go on day three? Is he like, he's going to get that look with those very long arms, 6'4", 311, nearly 35 inch arms?
Yeah. Grant's one that, you know, people are going to want to see up close, right? And because, like you said, when you're coming from the small school, you have to do everything perfectly. And we rarely see those guys end up on day one or even day two. It's rare. But the metrics, the athletic profile coming out, you know, 6'5", 311 pounds. Here's the crazy thing of this, Jess. He's only played football for 6 years. He didn't start until he was a junior in high school.
That's crazy.
Now, here's the other issue. He didn't play a lot at William & Mary. So you have these questions that you're betting on traits, right? You're basically saying like, hey, I believe that this guy is so elite gifted from a physical standpoint that we can coach him up enough. And we saw enough in the 1 year at William & Mary that we're not concerned about it, right? So that's the bugaboo with him. Another guy that I've seen starting to gain some steam, and he's really interesting, man, because you rarely see guys, you know, like you said, coming from these smaller schools getting this buzz, but Jackson Slater out of Sacramento State, 6'3", 311 pounds. He had really good times. You kind of look at it. He played left guard his entire time at Sacramento State, was a first team FCS All-American, obviously not AP All-American or anything like that, but really, really good guard prospect on the interior. So that's another name to know on day three, because he impressed in a lot of ways. I mean, again, 6'3", 311, 31 bench reps, excuse me, easier to say than it is to think about. Really, really solid athletic testing and was dominant at Sacramento State. So again, something with Grant and with Slater, right, that we kind of think is important. Those guys got to be dominant at the smaller level.
Yeah.
You know, and those two in particular were, you know, from there, it's you got to just be, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, you got to find the gems. Like, you got to find the guys that fit in what you're looking for, what you're wanting to do, and things of that nature.
And it's important to note that, remember how excited everyone was for Lasita Smith and Marquise Hayes? Lasita Smith has been bouncing around, hasn't stuck anywhere. Marquise Hayes is out of the league. I think he was in the UFL last year. And people loved Hayes, right? Remember that rookie year in camp? They loved Hayes. I know we haven't mentioned any centers. I want to say it just for the sake of saying it, because when you bring an Ohio State offensive line coach, it feels like you're destined to get an offensive lineman from Ohio State. So we talked about Josh Simmons. We talked about Donovan Jackson. Seth McLaughlin was the nation's best center. He was the Ribbington Trophy winner, played only 10 games and tore his Achilles. That means he will go day three. Someone will draft him. But he's not the only like good center. You look at the athletic traits of Jared Wilson from Georgia. It isn't as well. And I'm trying to remember who I heard on another part. Is it USC center Jonah Monheim? That's really probably going to be pretty decent.
Yeah. Monheim is an interesting one. The kid out of Jacksonville State, I believe it is, that by way of Georgia, that was one of the top guys. And then the Georgia guy, Jared Wilson, is supposed to be pretty good. You know, this is a class of centers that are going to regress the progress that had been made for guys going in round one and two, you know, and not in a negative way. I mean, these are guys that are going to go in, you know, these are on probably at best in the third round, but likely on day three.
Why is it the Big Ten produces like the top prospects at center every year? Like,
just because
why is that the Ribbington Trophy is always from the Big Ten?
It's just because of what they're asked to do from a call standpoint. They understand the game. There's one name we do have to mention, Jess. I don't know if this was in your notes. Drew Kindle. Pete's son.
Right.
So
that's right.
So yeah, so first team all ACC this year. He started 37 games at center for the Boston College. So he's definitely going to get a look around the league. But I mean, 6'4", but only 308 pounds, real short arms. Tested fine, very, very adequate athleticism, but you know, not a power guy in the least.
And anybody else before we wrap this up? Because I know you've got to get out of here.
No. I think this is a great year to need offensive linemen, man. Like, it's a great year to have these guys or have the need that the Cardinals have, because it's not an immediate need. Kind of like what we talked about with the defensive line, but it's a need that they can fulfill and fill out and get, you know, get taken care of, which is huge.
Awesome. So with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Secret podcast, Best Ever Cardinals Talk on the Web. This is our third draft show. What we'll do over the next week, we'll dive into the wide receivers. But until then, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening, as always. We'll be back again soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Rise up! Rise up! Rise up! Rise up!